They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We can put the Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, and we did.
If he doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks, no player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien posts it in! It's a rocket of a shot!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Joined in TSN 1290 studios by Sean Assor. Ezra Ginsberg is the man in the middle. Chris Curry producing this fine broadcast. Welcome to our NHL playoff preview show. The playoffs, of course, get underway momentarily. We get you set for the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. 8 series, 8 segments. That's what we're going to do on this Wednesday night, the final NHL This Week show of the season. We'll, of course, be back in October when the Jets season returns. You'll still find us on Saturdays on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9 a.m. here on this fine station. I say good evening to Ezra Ginsberg, wearing the brightest orange, neon orange shirt that I've seen. I got to say, without a shadow of doubt, I have no doubt whatsoever, Naomi bought you that shirt.
No, she didn't buy me this shirt.
Did Naomi approve of you buying that shirt?
Well, I didn't show her my shirt today because I changed and went home after work. But, you know, it's summertime outside now. I guess I should say springtime. It's plus 15. So, you know, it's time to start busting out the golf shirts. But certainly, you know, it doesn't get any more exciting than this, Drew. You have 5 series tonight, 3 tomorrow. This is my favorite time of the year, with the exception of the beginning of the season in October. So I'm ready to go here and go series by series, team by team.
I was going to say, Ezzy, maybe hopping on the Oilers bandwagon. I know the Edmonton is doing this whole support the orange theme now, so I figured maybe showing a little Mick love for McDavid. But
yeah, you'll have to wait for my pick here coming up, Sean, but orange is my favorite color. Drew knows that.
I had no idea about that whatsoever. No, really? No idea at all. Why would I know that orange is your favorite color?
It's the new black.
Because we've known each other for a long time?
I don't know. What's my favorite color?
I'm going to say purple.
No, it's not, but it's blue, but I appreciate the effort anyways. I don't know anybody's favorite color. I don't think I know my wife's favorite color. In any event, let's get right into it. We're going to start our playoff preview show by looking at that Edmonton Oilers San Jose Sharks series that gets underway later tonight. The Connor McDavid show makes its debut in the playoffs. The Oilers won the season series against the San Jose Sharks by a record of 3-1-1 in the 5 games these two teams played. It's sort of a classic matchup between a young team that's never been there before. For the most part, they have players certainly with some playoff experience. Milan Lucic comes to mind as a guy who's been there and who's hoisted the Stanley Cup. But you have the young Oilers, you know, led by Connor McDavid, the likely Hart Trophy winner. You have, you know, a guy like Leon Draisaitl, had a tremendous year for the Oilers, also his first playoff experience, versus the veteran San Jose Sharks, albeit a San Jose Sharks team that is banged up. We're not yet sure of the status of Joe Thornton, of Logan Couture, for tonight's Game 1 between the Sharks and the Oilers. But it is sort of a classic battle between a veteran team that went all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals last year in the San Jose Sharks, probably a little disappointed with how their season ended, dropping all the way to the third spot in the Pacific Division after leading the Pacific for much of the year, versus the up-and-coming Edmonton Oilers, the team they're going to have home ice advantage, you know, youth versus experience in that first series.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to frame it, Drew. It is youth versus experience, and for me, it's offense versus defense.
Sure.
And San Jose is a better defensive team. The numbers will tell you that, but Edmonton's a very good defensive team as well, and Cam Talbot had an excellent season, started 70-plus games, a career high for him. I believe he played more games than any other goaltender, if I'm not mistaken. But really, if you look at the numbers as well, it'll tell you that in this series, there isn't, I think, that big of an advantage for Edmonton. San Jose obviously lost those 6 games in a row at the end of March there. And, you know, 3-1-1 means that San Jose won two of those games, and one of those games was a one-goal game, right? So the season series is fairly even. It's a bit of a wash, if you ask me, Drew. But I'm picking Edmonton in the series, and I'll explain why throughout this segment. But, you know, you're talking about Connor McDavid, obviously, right off the bat, puts up 100 points. He finishes 11 points ahead of Sidney Crosby and Patrick Kane. But to me, the biggest change between this team this year and last year is the forward depth and the D pairings and the top six D. So you're talking about Adam Larson, and you're talking about Darnell Nurse having a better year, and you're talking about the acquisition of Chris Russell. And I don't think Peter Chiarelli gets enough credit, not only for how he made that trade, but how he improved this team defensively, right, Drew? And we saw this team quite a bit this year. They beat the Jets three times this year. And I think this is a different Edmonton Oilers team. I think the focus has been, Sean, that this team has made the playoffs for the first time since 2006. But this is a very good team. This isn't a team that just limped into the playoffs. They almost won the division, as you mentioned, Drew. And I think that when you talk about Joe Thornton and Logan Couture, mm-hmm. Logan Couture misses the last seven games of the year. He's wearing the face shield, if you saw the pictures from practice. Joe Thornton has got that knee injury. He misses the last three games of the season. By the way, I wouldn't be surprised if either both or one of these two players was in the lineup. Certainly, they're going to be back for the series, Drew. But the question is, it's not if they're coming back, it's how effective they're going to be.
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing, Ezzy. I think what you focus on, first of all, you focus on the center ice position, Logan Couture and Joe Thornton, not at 100%. That's a handful for the San Jose Sharks to recover from in itself. Looking at the speed factor, Joe Thornton suffering from a knee injury, if he's going to be an effective centerman in any line, he's going to be able to have to skate to keep up with the speedy Edmonton Oilers forwards. Talking about a couple guys that haven't even had any postseason experience, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Jordan Eberle, they're making their postseason debut. So exciting times for two guys that have been hearing for a very long time around an organization that we're going to turn the corner and things will come and all these picks will eventually lead us into the postseason. And now they finally got the one pick, Connor McDavid, that did lead them into the postseason. And it's going to be really interesting to see if those two guys can help out Connor McDavid, their captain, and provide a little bit of secondary scoring, because there's a lot of pressure on 97 entering into this series. And you look at RNH and Jordan Eberle, those are two guys that can help alleviate a lot of that pressure.
I think one of the matchups I'm most looking forward to in this series, and Connor McDavid is, it's not possible to shut Connor McDavid down.
No.
It just isn't. But I think what you're going to see is a very interesting matchup between Connor McDavid, and it's not a direct matchup, and a guy that on the defensive side for the Sharks, Marc-Edouard Vlasic, a guy who doesn't really get enough credit around the league for just how good he is defensively. Brent Burns gets all the props on the Sharks back end because he's such an offensive genius, and a lot of people say the Sharks offense runs through Brent Burns. But Marc-Edouard Vlasic, I mean, there's a reason why the guy continues to make international play for Team Canada on the international scene. It's because he is that good of a defensive defenseman. That's going to be a fascinating matchup, Vlasic versus McDavid.
Andrew, you mentioned, the offense runs through Burns, and I would agree with that, but it also runs through Thornton and Couture. Nobody had mm-hmm. more points last year mm-hmm. than Logan Couture, right? He was a Conn Smythe candidate, and you're right. It's going to be Marc-Edouard Vlasic and Justin Braun that are going to be matched up against the Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Patrick Maroon line. And I would expect probably, Drew, it to be the line of Thomas Hertl, Yannick Hansen, and Mikhail Bodker matching up against the McDavid line as far as the forwards go. But again, it goes back to both of these teams can score goals, and both of them are good defensively, right? We talked about Edmonton this year. They've made a huge improvement in their defensive zone play. Because Cam Talbot was there last year. Mm-hmm. Cam Talbot had a good year last year. It was this group of defensemen that needed an upgrade, and we talked about it. You add Chris Russell and you add Adam Larson to the group that includes Darnell Nurse, Oscar Klefbom, and others, and Andre Sekera, I should mention, and it's a darn good group now. So when you're talking about how these two teams match up, then you're also going to have the question of, well, if Logan Couture is healthy, then he's going to be playing on that top line with Joe Pavelski and Mark Melker Carlson, and if Joe Thornton is healthy, then he's probably going to match up on that line, and then you get into matchup problems for San Jose once you get down the D pairings. You've got Brendan Dillon and David Schlemko most likely matching up against the third line of Edmonton, which is Mark Letestu, Drake Cajula, and Zach Cassian. That line's been very effective, not only in a forechecking role, but they've actually produced pretty well on the offensive side of the puck. So I think it's going to be a closer series than I think many people think. I'm picking Edmonton in six games.
Okay, well, that's, I guess I was going to ask you for your predictions, but we'll mark down yours right now so that we know that we have it on the record. Sean, you're sort of, what else are you seeing in this series? Just a quick comment, if you will, about Todd McClellan. McClellan, of course, mm-hmm. very familiar with the San Jose Sharks. He was their head coach for a number of years prior to Pete DeBoer, of course, getting that job when McClellan was, finally time and sort of just run out on his time in San Jose. McClellan behind the bench in Edmonton now, very familiar with a lot of the players that the Sharks are going to bring to the table.
Yeah, it's a really interesting dynamic because we talk about, the experience versus inexperience and how the Edmonton Oilers are a young team that haven't been to the postseason since 2006. And you look at their coach, he knows the opposition extremely well. So maybe that can offset some of the inexperience for the Edmonton Oilers, a guy that knows how the elite players on the San Jose Sharks tick, maybe what gets them going, what gets them a little rattled. Not sure. What's important to me, though, for Cam Talbot's sake, is he's going to have a healthy dose of Joe Pavelski net front. And it's going to be real important for the Edmonton Oilers to clear Pavelski out from in front of that net, because Joe Pavelski in the postseason does absolute damage in front of the blue paint.
And possession is going to be very important in this series. San Jose is the fifth best score-adjusted Corsi team in the league. Edmonton's 13th, so a lot of the analytics crowd are looking at that, and they're saying San Jose has the advantage there. But the reality is Edmonton just scores so much, and I think that that is going to be a key for San Jose. That's what they're going to try to do, Drew. They're going to try to, hem Edmonton in their zone, try to limit their speed and their chances, right? So the line of Patrick Marleau, Joel Ward, Eunice Donskoy, they're going to try to, create the cycle and keep it in the Oilers' zone. But you can only limit Connor McDavid's line so much. I mean, this line was red hot. I believe Connor McDavid finished off with, a 12-game point streak?
I think any game he doesn't get a point, you're surprised more than him racking up points.
Yeah. So that's the key. You want to really limit that line. I mean, that's obvious. So it's going to be very interesting. To me, it's really offense versus defense. That's what it is. It's really limiting that top line because they tore up the league this year. Leon Draisaitl mm-hmm. had a career year, over 70 points. So it's going to be very interesting. I think you give the slight advantage to the Oilers maybe in net with Cam Talbot.
Really?
But as far as special teams, I don't know if there's a huge advantage on either side. So it's going to be a very good series. And with the exception of the Washington-Toronto series, I don't think there are going to be many series that are one-sided.
Sean, as he's on the record of saying Edmonton in six, please put your comments to the audience regarding how long this series is going to go and who's going to be victorious.
Oilers in six.
Edmonton in six as well is what mm-hmm. you're going with.
Another thing to mention, Drew, the Oilers have been fantastic in their own division and in the Western Conference. I believe they only lost six games in the Pacific Division this year.
I hate to be a contrarian, but sometimes that's what I am. I think that the Sharks are, I think their veteran their veteran presence is going to be a factor in this series. I think it's going to be a very close series, but I'm going to take the Sharks in seven. To defeat the Oilers in that critical game seven. I do, there's a bit of an, I'd love to put a bit of an asterisk next to it saying if Thornton and Couture aren't Thornton and Couture, if they're not what you expect out of them, mm-hmm. then I think this is a series the Oilers are going to be victorious in. But obviously, we will see in the next couple weeks how this series is going to play out.
Yeah, and it's going to be a late start, so we're not going to know literally until an hour or so before game time if Couture and Thornton are going to play. But at the very least, they're coming in without a lot of game action mm-hmm. as of late, right? So when you're talking about Couture, mm-hmm. he hasn't played in a couple weeks, and Joe Thornton hasn't played in the last three games. So that is going to be a key to the series, but again, the big key is limiting not only Connor McDavid, but that line with Leon Draisaitl and Patrick Maroon.
When we come back, we look at the Anaheim Ducks and the Calgary Flames. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our NHL Playoff Preview Spectacular on TSN 1290.
You were pathetic. You were pathetic. It was a pathetic display. No bite back, no kick back. Top guys didn't do anything. And we need somebody to step up.
Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. NHL playoff preview show as the playoffs have just got underway. Going to shift our focus to the Ducks and the Flames series as soon as Ezzy answers his phone call right now. Ezzy, who doesn't know that you're on air right now that's calling you? Who's that rude? Family? Friends? Doesn't matter. Anyways, this segment brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. The Ducks and the Flames, they're going to get underway tomorrow night in Anaheim. The Ducks, the winners of the Pacific Division. They won the Pacific on the last night of the regular season. The Flames, they're the first wild card team. If I'm not mistaken, and you guys can correct me, is this the first year since the divisional realignment that there's been four teams out of the Pacific and four teams out of the Central?
I am not 100% sure about that, to be honest.
Off the top of my head... Isn't that, I think that's true. I'll let you guys look into that. But off the top of my head, I think that might be correct. So the Ducks and the Flames, the Ducks with a 4-1 lead in the season series over Calgary. You know, this is another sort of younger team, albeit not completely inexperienced in the playoffs after the Flames made it a couple seasons ago unexpectedly. But another young team versus a veteran team that has been there before. Yet, from my vantage point here, I think most people would say the Ducks are the clear-cut favorites over the Flames, whereas the Oilers, on the flip side, were the clear-cut favorite over the veteran San Jose Sharks. How do you see this series playing out as the sort of keys to this series between the Ducks and the Flames? And do you think there's going to be lingering animosity over the Cam Fowler injury where Mark Giordano hit him knee-to-knee? Controversial hit that occurred late in the season.
Yeah, well, let's start off with that first, Drew. I mean, these teams don't like each other, so they're not going to tell you that there's going to be lingering animosity from that knee-to-knee hit that knocked Cam Fowler out of this series. But I would agree that the Anaheim Ducks are going into this series as the favorite, and they finished, what was it, 10 points apart, I believe, roughly. And when you talk about the Calgary Flames, you immediately think of that dominant line of Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, and Michael Ferland. And certainly the Anaheim Ducks would love to have Cam Fowler in this series, but the Anaheim Ducks are very deep defensively. So are they going to miss Cam Fowler? Absolutely. But when you talk about who's going to replace him in the lineup, Shea Theodore is the defenseman that replaces him in the lineup. But when you talk about Sammy Vatanen and Hampus Lindholm, Josh Manson's had a very underrated season, in my opinion. Kevin Bieksa has played most of the season. I think he's done a really good job on that third pair. So I think, you know, when you talk about Calgary, the biggest difference between this Flames team this year and the team that made the playoffs a couple of years ago and got out in the second round, to me, is forward depth. And you go right down the lineup, Michael Backlund, Matthew Tkachuk, and Michael Frolik, I imagine, will be tasked with shutting down the Getzlaf, Patrick Eves, Ricard Raquel line. And then when you talk about Sam Bennett, Chris Versteeg, and Alex Chiasson, that's a pretty darn good third line. I realize Sam Bennett has his struggles this year, mm-hmm. But Chris Versteeg has actually been a very nice pickup. He was on a professional tryout agreement. And then even the fourth line of Matt Stajan, Troy Brower, and Lance Boma has been very good for the Calgary Flames. So, I mean, both teams have improved in net. I mean, Jod Gimson has not got it done. That's the big question for me with this Ducks team. This Ducks team has not gone all the way to the finals since they won it in 2007, right? Mm-hmm.
They've had some Western Conference finals appearances.
Sure. But, you know, not as of late. And mm-hmm. when you talk about, you know, this series, I do think it's going to be close. And I do think there is a good chance that this series does go to seven games. And, you know, the Calgary Flames have a bit of an advantage on the power play. But the Anaheim Ducks are a better defensive team. And, you know, Jonathan Bernier did a great job replacing John Gibson when he was injured. So, you know, if Gibson does falter, then Bernier can come in. So, I mean, both teams have depth. The Anaheim Ducks, we talked about Patrick Eves earlier. He was a great acquisition at the trade deadline. And then when you go down to the third line, you've got Corey Perry on that third line, and that line is centered by Antoine Vermette. So lots of depth on both rosters, Drew. It's hard to really find, you know, an equalizer. It's going to, at the end of the day, I think, come down to goaltending in the series. And I prefer John Gibson in this series over Brian Elliott, but Brian Elliott was excellent for the St. Louis Blues last year when they went to the conference finals. So I really do think this is going to be a very tight series, and I wouldn't be surprised if we have three or four overtimes in the series. And by the way, should mention, both of these teams are the top penalized teams in the league, and they like to hit. The Ducks are a heavy team, and the Flames aren't afraid to throw their weight around. So fast and physical, and I think they're going to be very tight checking.
And to your point, animosity already exists, given one, division rivals, two, lingering resentment from the Fowler hit. So it's not like these teams are going to need a couple games to get their hate on. Their hate is already on as we start with game one. Sean, quick question for you, trivia wise, do you know the last time the Calgary Flames won in the regular season in Anaheim?
I don't know the date. I know how many games, because that was going to be my point. Okay. Entering, excellent segue, Drew.
There you go. 25 games.
25 games they have not won at the Honda Center, where I believe the series begins.
Yes, it does. It is.
So 2 games at the Honda Center, and I think it's just absolutely critical that the Calgary Flames shed that curse and try to get a win in that building. Just from a mental standpoint, if you go down 2-0, going back home, I mean, they say it's not a playoff series until the home team loses.
Mm-hmm.
However, if that's in the back of your head that we've now lost 27 straight games at the Honda Center, it's going to make for a real tough mental road for the Calgary Flames, I think, returning to California. Also, talk about the physicality. I think this is where a guy like Michael Ferland can really show what he's worth to a team for the Calgary Flames. Playing alongside Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, you know Ryan Kesler is salivating at the idea of roughing up that line just a little bit. I bet you Johnny Gaudreau has snuck into the equipment room this morning, handed his shoulder pads and gloves to the trainer, and, hey, you want to stitch a couple extra pieces of padding around there? Because they're coming after the big guns for the Flames, for sure. Another guy, as he mentioned, Sam Bennett. I think he's going to be a crucial part in this series. He was kind of known as like that buzzsaw forward when he came into the league and kind of lost his identity a little bit. You know, he wasn't throwing the weight around as much as he used to. But this is the opportunity for a guy like that to kind of reestablish himself as that kind of agitator, third-line center, where you can just kind of go out, smash some bodies, and be effective that way, kind of think about scoring as a secondary option.
And, Sean, we should mention a couple of other points in this series, right? Glenn Gullitson's never coached in a playoff game.
First time, Randy Carlyle
has the Stanley Cup under his belt, right?
69-0. 69 NHL playoff games for the Anaheim Ducks for Randy Carlyle behind the bench, never mind his playing days. 0 playoff experience for Glenn Gullitson.
Right, and that doesn't necessarily mean, Drew, that Calgary can't win this series, but what it does mean is when you're a team that hasn't won a game in a very long time in an opponent's rink, and you have a coach who doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, in fact, he has none, I think that's a disadvantage for Calgary. And
For the record, January 19th, 2004 was the last time the Calgary Flames won in Anaheim in regulation. They did win one playoff game there in 2006. So the Flames did win one playoff game in Anaheim 11 years ago.
And Drew, you can bet that Randy Carlyle is sending out the line of Ryan Kesler, Andrew Cogliano, and Jakob Silfverberg against the line of Sean Monahan, Johnny Gaudreau, and Michael Ferland. And I agree with Sean. Michael Ferland's a great player, former Brandon Wheat King. He's a guy that can definitely mix it up with anybody in the NHL. But I still think Anaheim has the advantage depth-wise, even though I think Bradtree Living's done an excellent job making that bottom six or bottom three, whatever you want to call it, better. So you're talking about guys like Troy Brower. You're talking about guys like Chris Versteeg. You're talking about guys Matthew Tkachuk. Even though he's a rookie, I would still put him in that category because they didn't have him last time around, right? That was through the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be very interesting to see which D-pairing he puts up against the Gaudreau-Monahan-Ferland line. Is it Sami Vatanen with Josh Manson, or is it Hampus Lindholm with Brandon Montour? You'd usually see Cam Fowler there. So they definitely lose a bit of offense from their defense as far as the Ducks go, Drew. But really, I mean, I think this is going to be a lot closer than people think because you're going to also have that element, I think, even though you might not have the carryover specifically with Mark Giordano, and obviously Cam Fowler's not going to be there, but these two teams hate each other. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously not going to, you know, speak through the media and say that they hate each other, but you know they do. So this is going to be physical. There's going to be lots of power plays. And we talked about it earlier, Calgary's got a really good power play. They've got the advantage there, but the Ducks have the better penalty kill. Very good, very tight defensive team. I think Randy Carlyle has these guys playing more loose. I think in the previous years under Bruce Boudreau, they were feeling more pressure, as you said, Drew, to get all the way to the final, and they haven't done that. They got the closest a couple years ago when they lost in 7 games, right? So, again, it's going to be close. I'm going with the Ducks, though.
We have the first goal in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's a guy we're very familiar with. The G in GST, Tanner Glass, opens the scoring in the 2017 NHL playoffs, getting the Rangers on the board. They lead the Montreal Canadiens 1-0. That's, of course, a series we'll touch on later on in the program.
High glove.
But former Winnipeg Jet Tanner Glass getting the opening goal in these 2017 playoffs for the New York Rangers. Ezzy, give me your prediction one more time for the Flames and the Ducks.
I'm going to take the Ducks in 7.
Ezzy goes with Anaheim in seven. I've marked it down in the big board. We will, of course, publish these so that our predictions are there for mocking and or praise later on. Sean, we got a couple minutes. You can give us in about 60 seconds or so your reasoning and your prediction for this series.
I'm going to go Ducks in six, solely based on the fact that just from an offensive standpoint, Anaheim enters with 420 goal scorers on the season, so they've got the offensive punch, including Patrick Eaves, acquired at the trade deadline. Calgary, only 220 goal scorers, Backlund and Monahan. So just from an offensive standpoint alone, I think Calgary's got a handful. Ducks in six.
In six for Sean. I will make it a clean sweep and say the Anaheim Ducks, they're going to win this series in five games, I believe. I have this as one of the few series in the first round that aren't going to be, I shouldn't say it's not going to be competitive because I think they're going to be close games, but this is a series where I think the Ducks' veteran leadership, their veteran play, and the fact that they know that their window is rapidly closing, this might be their last chance to make it all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals with this current core group. I think the Anaheim Ducks are men on a mission, as they were, and I think it's going to be Anaheim in five. We had to break and bring in Scott Powers of The Athletic in Chicago. He'll join us to preview the Predators and the Blackhawks. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Alongside Sean Assor and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Welcome back to NHL This Week. You can reach us here on Twitter in studio at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com in Chicago, he covers the Chicago Blackhawks, a good friend of the program. We welcome back Scott Powers. Scott, good evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Scott, obviously bring you on to talk about the Predators and the Blackhawks. That first round series gets underway tomorrow. You know, the Blackhawks, you know, as we're so just used to at this point in time, they finish as the top team in the Western Conference. They play the, you know, what used to be the number 8 seed Nashville Predators. Blackhawks have had a history of success against the Predators in the playoffs. Why would this year be any different? If you're a Nashville Predators fan, what are you pointing to that should give you hope that this is going to be a different year than that we've seen so often when it comes to them playing the Blackhawks come playoff time?
Well, I think you look back even at the last two series that these teams played in the playoffs, and I mean, those were pretty exciting series where a bounce here or there, and I think Nashville wins both of those. You know, 2010 had some dramatic games. 2015, you know, game one, Corey Crawford gets run out, and Scott Darling has to come in and has 42, but he's got 40, all 42 shots he faces in relief, and, you know, the double overtime game, there's a triple overtime game. Blackhawks won both of those. When you look back at the Cup, the Blackhawks 15 Cup run, you can arguably say Nashville gave them the hardest time, and that was a great series. And so I don't think there was much difference in 2010 or 15 between the Blackhawks and Predators. And I really don't think there's a whole lot of difference this year either. I think regular seasons are a little bit, you know, just I think the year that Nashville had, you know, obviously a little bit underachieved points wise considering what everyone kind of thought the team would be, but when you look at some of the underlying numbers, you know, the overtime and shootout losses, stuff like that. I mean, there's reasons why those, you know, maybe they didn't have as many points, you know, not getting those points in overtime and shootout. And if they did, they're probably a lot further up that division. And, you know, the good possession team, you know, the fact that Pekka is playing pretty well as of late, he's had an up and down year, but he's played better the last month or so. And there's a lot of players on that team with skill, and obviously they have some defensive depth. And then, I think their top line, in Forsberg and Johansson and Arvidsson, it can match up there. So I think there's a lot of reasons why the Blackhawks are wary of this series and certainly has their attention going into it. So I think the Blackhawks are pretty focused on Nashville, knowing they have the capability of beating them. Where as much as the Blackhawks were the top seed in the Western Conference, I think there's a lot of ways that Nashville can be better than Blackhawks.
Scott, Hawks center Artem Anisimov has not played a game since March 14th. How important is a healthy, productive Anisimov going to be in this series?
Yeah, I think it assists you. I think the fact that he has Panarin and Kane, on his wings that he can ease in a little bit. But I think he is a key ingredient to that line. And, you know, it's his net front presence. It's, you know, winning a little bit more for his faceoffs than they were probably getting previously on that line as of late. He's not great himself, but he's a little bit better than Tanner Carroll had been. And then it's, you know, just winning pucks and the little things and a little defensive play. You know, I think those are all the kind of attributes that he adds to that. And then he has some skill. You know, he scored 20-plus goals this year. And, you know, if it's whether it's a tip-in or a rebound or, you know, just doing things around the net, it's key to what that line's been able to do. And he kind of allows that space for Panarin and Kane to play, you know, wide and do what they do. So, I think that line's been playing pretty well without Nisimov, but he certainly brings some ingredients, especially that net front presence that they were probably lacking. So, you know, when you're talking about lines matching up, I think that line with Nisimov, you know, gives the Blanikovs an advantage because of, you know, you put those three guys together and it's pretty tough to stop.
Scott, I'm curious. The Blackhawks must be, I don't know if relieved is the right word, maybe happy, that not only do they have a healthy Corey Crawford entering the postseason, but also a healthy Scott Darling, who's proven that if push comes to shove, he can also get it done in the playoffs along with Corey Crawford.
Yeah, you know, I think that you have this tandem, and they've certainly relied on it in the past playoffs, and, you know, throughout the regular season, you know, they got to where they were because they had two goalies. One guy, you know, Crawford had the appendectomy surgery, and Darling had to step in for a while, and certainly kind of held the Blackhawks to a high level. At the same time, I don't think you necessarily want that. You know, I think in the playoffs, the Blackhawks were able to ride Corey Crawford from start to finish, you know, just the way they did and when they won the Cup in 13. I think, you know, having Darling is a nice insurance policy, but I think you don't want Crawford to being toyed with the way he was in the Nashville series, where you weren't sure what his confidence level was going to be at again. You know, he got lit up back-to-back games in games 1 and 2 and 15, and it just kind of worked out in the Blackhawks' favor, where Darling led them a few games, and late in the series, Darling had his own issues, and they kind of went back to Crawford, and Crawford was able to regain his composure and play at a high level. But you know, going into this, I think the Blackhawks, back of their mind, yeah, it's nice to have Darling, but I think they need Crawford to be at that level. He's been in past playoffs for them to succeed because, you know, as good as Darling's been, he's yet to prove that he can, you know, be a Stanley Cup winning goaltender, and I think Crawford's shown that a few times now, and I still think Crawford's the better goalie. So, nice backup plan, but, yeah, I think it's important for Crawford to be really good.
Scott Powers is our guest on NHL This Week. We're previewing the Predators and Blackhawks series. Scott covers the Blackhawks for TheAthletic.com in Chicago. Scott, last year the Pittsburgh Penguins won the Stanley Cup with three rookie forwards in their lineup. This year, as the playoffs get underway and the series gets underway tomorrow, the Blackhawks are going to have four rookie forwards in their lineup. Do the Blackhawks look at last year's Penguins and say, okay, you know, used to be that rookies were sort of a detriment to a team come playoff time? Do they look at the Penguins' success last year with their rookies and say, we can just emulate that, we have the core group that knows how to win in the playoffs, and they're going to be able to guide the rookies going forward as they get their first taste of April, May, and June hockey?
Yeah, for sure. I Joel Quenneville talked about it today. You know, someone asked about the Penguins and what they were able to do last year with the rookies in the lineup. And, you know, he certainly saw some advantages, or at least some tips from what they were able to do and to be able to win in that manner. The nice thing for the Blackhawks is the rookies are complementary players, where they do play some Nick Schmaltz plays on the top line, but the fact that he's playing with Taves, and then you got Ryan Hartman on the third line, and the fact that he's playing Marian Hossa, and that sort of thing, I think is to the Blackhawks' advantage, where those guys are kind of eased into a little bit, and they can rely on some of those veterans and guys who've been through this many years. And even talking to Ryan Hartman today, you know, he's playing with Marian Hossa, who will play in his tomorrow, playing his 202nd playoff game in his career, and it'll be Ryan Hartman's first. And Hartman kind of just marveled at how many games Hossa has been playing. But, you know, Hartman said he's kind of has a mentality where he's, you know, I think he kind of follows those veterans' lead and just realizing it's another game where obviously a lot's on the line, but to play like any other game. So, you know, I think those Blackhawks rookies have kind of stepped up throughout this year and kind of evolved. And, you know, a guy like Nick Schmaltz, who had to go down to the AHL and play for the Rockford IceHogs for a bit since he wasn't, you know, getting it done at the NHL level. He comes back up, and in January he gets a chance to play on the top line with Taves and Richard Panik, and that line just really clicks. And, you know, it's one of the reasons why, you know, I think the Blackhawks are a true contender, because they lacked that top line for much of the season, and Taves' production was really lacking. And Nick Schmaltz kind of found his game and was able to kind of find chemistry on that top line, and all of a sudden the Blackhawks had, you know, two really potent lines. So I think those rookies have kind of proved themselves throughout the season. They're kind of ready for this, and it does help that they're not being relied on. You know, this is an Austin Matthews type of thing where these guys have to be the leaders. They have to contribute in some way for the Blackhawks to win, but not necessarily lead them.
Scott, is it safe to say defensively the biggest matchup for the Chicago Blackhawks is going to be Keith and Hjalmarsson against the top line of Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson, and Victor Arvidsson? Arvidsson had a career year, and Johansson and Forsberg were also very good offensively all throughout the year.
Yeah, I'm curious how Quinville matches it up, where obviously that third top pairing, Keith and Hjalmarsson, but they also have Oduya and Seabrook in that, you know, that second pairing. And Campbell and Van Riemsdyk in the third, and Campbell and Van Riemsdyk probably more of an offensive, you know, see more offensive zone starts. But, you know, those top two pairings are pretty interchangeable for Quinville, where he likes the offense and the defense that both provide. You know, Oduya is more the defensive defenseman, and, you know, Seabrook's got some offensive skill. And then, you know, the other pairing, you know, Duncan Keith's been at a pretty high level this year, and Hjalmarsson provides that defensive ability. So, you know, I expect the Keith Hjalmarsson pairing to get the most minutes. But I expect Quinville to lean on that Oduya Seabrook pairing a lot too, where he has a lot of trust in them. The fact that you know, acquiring Oduya, he's played on a couple cup winning teams with Chicago, and the fact that Seabrook and even down the line, I mean, the Hjalmarsson, Keith and Campbell, these are all guys that Quinville's won cups with, so I think he trusts them in a lot of different situations. But I think that top line of Predators may see a lot of both of those top pairings.
Scott, Richard Panik is an incredible story this year. I'm curious, such a tremendous regular season. Has he placed a lot of pressure on himself, maybe to show that the regular season kind of wasn't a fluke and that he can carry over what a great season he's had into the postseason?
Yeah, I think so. I think for him this year there was some inconsistency, where he had such an amazing start where he scored six goals in the first, you know, four or five games, and then kind of tailed off, and then as of late it's kind of picked up. And you know, Schmaltz and Taves and Panik have all kind of clicked here in the last few months. So, yeah, I think there's, you know, for Panik, I think there's still people who doubt him and certainly questions, you know, what his future is like. He's had this breakout season scoring, you know, 20-plus and having his ups and downs. And, you know, he's going into probably going into contract negotiations with the Blackhawks after the season. So I think there's a lot of motivation for Panik. And, you know, for him, just talking to him throughout the year, it sounds like a lot of it's mental for him often. So I don't know how much he's going to want to think about proving himself or anything. He's one of those guys who just try to stick to what he does best and try not to think of any of those exterior things. But, you know, another one of those keys where the Blackhawks have, you know, I think a year ago, one of the reasons why they got bounced by the Blues in the first round was they lacked that depth scoring. And, you know, this year to have six 20-goal scorers and a seventh in Hartman at 19 goals, the Blackhawks have been able to get that depth scoring they liked a year ago. And, you know, Panik's been one of those guys that's been able to contribute that, you know, showed some signs late last season after they acquired him and gave him a chance. And even in the playoffs, he, you know, played a top six role. And now he's been flourishing. So, I think he's one of those keys to the playoffs for the Blackhawks to succeed.
The Blackhawks and the Predators get underway tomorrow night in Chicago. Scott Powers will be there covering the series for TheAthletic.com. Scott, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Take care,
Scott. Thanks again. Guys, I'll give you your opportunity, your prediction on the Blackhawks and the Predators series. Ezzy, I'll start with you. How do you see this 1-8 series shaking out?
Yeah, and, you know, you look at 1-8 and you say that Chicago has a huge advantage. I don't think they have as big of an advantage as some people think. I'm taking Chicago in this series, and I think Chicago is going to use their first-round exit last year as motivation. Also, you know, you have some injuries as far as Nashville goes. Callie Yarncroke is injured. Colin Wilson is also injured. So I think that's going to hurt them a little bit. As far as the advantages that Chicago has, we know that as far as the top-end talent, Nashville does not have a Patrick Kane, but Nashville certainly has a lot of offensive depth, arguably better offensive depth than Chicago. So I'm going to take Chicago, and I'm going to take Chicago in six games.
Sean, same question over to you.
I have Chicago in five. Pekka-Rinne showing a little bit in decreasing abilities as the year has progressed. He's playing great as of late, but I think the goaltender is going to be putting a lot of pressure on himself to show that he can perform the way he used to be able to, and we'll see if he can.
You're skeptical
through.
if he can actually
yeah,
pull
I,
it off.
Yeah, I think mentally, I think he's in a weird place, and I think the Hawks can prey on that. Hawks in five.
I will echo your prediction. I also have the Chicago Blackhawks in five. I think they are. There's no reason why I will be surprised if they are not the Western Conference representative in the Stanley Cup final. Everything seems to be going for them. Number one seed in the West. A matchup against the team they're familiar with. I think this is the Blackhawks. Being the Blackhawks, what we're so used to seeing, I think it's Blackhawks in five. When we come back, one final Western Conference playoff series. That's the Blues and the Wild. We talk about that series next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Minnesota Wild taking on the St. Louis Blues, and sometimes the storylines write themselves.
Yeah,
Mike Yeo taking over for Ken Hitchcock around midseason. He pilots the Blues back into the playoffs, taking on his former team in Minnesota as we check out the breakdown here. A few more check marks in the Blues category, but again, just from the head coaching perspective, it's a juicy storyline.
A juicy storyline, no doubt, as the guys from NHL.com broke it down. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Must say, Azzy, you and Aaron from Bernstein's Deli recorded a new commercial. Must say, I quite like it. Talk about Bernstein's, about a place, you know, when you're heading out, if you need some food for the grill, great place to stop in and get some. If you're heading to the lake and you need to pick up some deli, Bernstein's Deli is also a great destination. Kudos on that new commercial for Bernstein's Deli. You can hear it on the station, of course, throughout the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. The Blues and the Wild, the final Western Conference playoff matchup. It's a 2-3 matchup between the Wild. They have home ice advantage, having finished second in the Central Division. The Blues finished third in the division. Two teams very familiar with one another. Who has the advantage on that familiarity? Mike Yeo was head coach of the Wild just last year. You know, he goes to St. Louis as their sort of head coach in waiting. It's a bad year in St. Louis to start. Ken Hitchcock gets dismissed. Mike Yeo moves into the head man job. The Blues are all of a sudden on fire. They're a great team towards the end of the year. They finished the season 15-2-2 in their last 19. Minnesota Wild, they were one of the best teams in the league for a large portion of the season, battling the Chicago Blackhawks for first in the Central Division. They fall off fairly dramatically over the last month or 6 weeks of the season. Is this a case of the team with the momentum might even be the favorite, even though they are technically the third place team in this series? You know, do you see the Blues having an advantage over the Wild based on the momentum sort of thing?
I don't know if there is an advantage or favorite in this series, Drew. I mean, I have this series going seven games, and when a series is going to go to its seventh game, I think it's really tough to say that there is a favorite, right? I think we're going to see a lot of overtime games in this series, just like I thought we were going to have a lot of overtime games in the Flames-Ducks series. So, I mean, there's a lot of interesting storylines, I think, guys. When you're talking about the St. Louis Blues, you mentioned the coaching change. Mike Yeo takes over for Ken Hitchcock, and Ken Hitchcock obviously was just hired by the Dallas Stars. Not many people thought that Ken Hitchcock was going to be fired this year.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Mike Yeo, who's facing his former team, as you mentioned, Drew. So the St. Louis Blues team has really changed, and it's been on the defensive side of the puck, really, and that's really has been their bread and butter for many of the last, let's call it, half a dozen years here. And You know, you look at the Minnesota Wild, and we know that they were in on the verge of winning the division, and they've kind of faltered here the last 3 months. And I really think the way Devan Dubnyk plays really shows you if the way that the Wild go is the way Devan Dubnyk goes. He's got a 22-7-3 record of the first 41 games. In the last 41 games of the year, he's 18-12-2, but his save percentage goes from 940 to 906, and his goals against goes from 1.77 to 2.75. So, I mean, that's a big drop off as far as his numbers go. And the Minnesota Wild, I mean, this is a versatile team, but when you compare the Minnesota Wild's defense to the St. Louis Blues defense, you know, who do you give the advantage? I'd probably give the advantage to Minnesota in both departments. But, you know, you've still got Alex Pietrangelo, Jay Bouwmeester, Colton Parayko. You're missing Kevin Shattenkirk. Obviously, you've taken a little bit of a step back there. And when you're talking about the Minnesota Wild, Eric Staal's obviously been a great addition. And the line of Eric Hall, Mikko Koivu, and Michael Granlund has been absolutely on fire. So slight advantage to the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues. And, you know, Jake Allen was not the number one goaltender for them last year. It was Brian Elliott. So you got to give the advantage to Devan Dubnyk. But again, he didn't finish very strong. He had a better first half than the second half. So if you're trying to find an advantage here, it's Minnesota slightly. And if you go through all of the categories, goals for, goals against, power play, penalty kill, there isn't a big advantage for either of these two teams.
You mentioned, you talk about the goaltending matchup. Worth noting, Jake Allen, remember, it wasn't that many months ago where he was given, you know, almost a week off, give or take. Coming into Winnipeg.
He they said, played stay, Phoenix, stay home.
Phoenix Copley was their goalie because he was mentally just a wreck. Since the coaching change in St. Louis and Marty Brodeur took over as goaltending coach, Jake Allen, a 1.85 goals against average and a 938 save percentage. So you definitely know that whatever Marty Brodeur, obviously, as he's, you know, number one goaltender of all time, he's been whispering sweet nothings in the ear of Jake Allen. Looks like it's been paying off as of late for the Blues young goaltender.
Yeah, when that was announced that Jake Allen wouldn't be traveling to Winnipeg, and the Blues organization kind of told him to stay home, clear his head. He had just had a child, spend some family time. It worked. Mm-hmm. Everyone was thinking it was crazy. I guess it worked. And then on the opposite side, like as he was talking about, Devan Dubnyk showing a little bit of struggle. And I do agree, Ezzy, I think the Wild are only as good as their goaltender, and I think that they are going to be limited to how he performs. Where I do think the Wild have an advantage is down the middle of the ice. You look at the Blues, Ivan Barbashev centering Vladimir Tarasenko, Jaden Schwartz. That's a very talented line, but Ivan Barbashev is a rookie, playing his first NHL season, and he's tasked now with playing with Vladimir Tarasenko and Jaden Schwartz. So essentially, Jaden Schwartz, kind of a versatile player, but Vladimir Tarasenko is the trigger guy. So Ivan Barbashev is probably thinking to himself, I got to get this guy the puck all the time now, because he's going to be our bread and butter. Second line, Jori Lehterä down the middle, Patrick Berglund centering the third line. You look at the Wild, they got Mikko Koivu, Eric Staal, and the recently acquired Marty Hanzel. That is a solid threesome down the middle, and then Joel Eriksson to round out the fourth line. But I just think through the middle of the ice, the Wild are so much more superior, and I feel that that experience and the size and Mikko Koivu's versatility, I think that the advantage for the forward lines goes to the Wild.
And you maybe give the advantage to the Koivu-Granlund line there, Sean, and maybe the second line you say is better, the Staal, Niederreiter-Parise line is better than St. Louis' second line of Sobotka, Lehterä, and Steen. But then you get into once you go down the depth chart, and really it is going to come down to matchups. And, you know, we should mention the Minnesota Wild had 12 players who scored at least 10 goals. And that's incredible. That's different than in previous years. You'd be saying that St. Louis over the years with guys like David Backes and Troy Brouwer, and unfortunately Robbie Fabry is not going to be in this series. But over the years, you would say that St. Louis probably has more forward depth than most other teams. But now it's the Minnesota Wild. And that's because a lot of the guys like Jason Zucker and Mikael Granlund and Nino Niederreiter have had breakout years this year. And then you throw in Eric Staal onto that second line. I agree with Sean. I think they have the depth up the middle and the advantage up the middle over the St. Louis Blues. But again, I think when you're talking about Devan Dubnyk, he has to be the Devan Dubnyk of the first half of the year, not the second half of the year. So it's going to be a very interesting series, very close, Drew. I really could say that Minnesota has the advantage, but it's for me, it's slightly. So, I mean, I want to go with the Minnesota Wild, but I just get the feeling, especially with the Minnesota Wild, the way they played, you know, in the kind of February to March, mid-March portion of the season, they struggled at times. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with St. Louis in seven.
St. Louis in seven for Ezzy. That would be your first, what I would describe as, quote-unquote, upset if you look at the strict rankings of it. But when it's a seven-game series, it tells you how close you expect the series to be. Sean, your thoughts on this series, your prediction on this series?
I do think we talked about maybe a little bit of overtime. We mentioned that heading into the segment. I think this is the opening round series that will show a lot of extra hockey. I mm-hmm. think both these teams are going to try to push it to overtime if need be, not try to push the pace to get that game winner late. Based on their solid goaltenders, I'm going mini in seven.
Mini in seven is what Sean has to say. I will, for the second series in a row, I'm going to actually echo what Sean has to say. I think it's mini in seven as well. My thinking being, mini is sort of built up to this point. They think that this is a real opportunity for them. St. Louis has sort of had a year of transition. They've moved from Ken Hitchcock to Mike Yeo. They traded away Kevin Shattenkirk. They have some injuries on the front end with, you know, you mentioned Robbie Fabry out of the lineup.
Paul Stastny
out of the lineup. You bring in a guy like Vladimir Sobotka, who's been playing over in the KHL for the last 3 years. I think the Blues are a team that's, you know, sort of more just happy to be there, to have made the playoffs after their struggles of the regular season. I think the Wild need this series desperately. I have the Wild in seven as well. Will be a fascinating series. That's it for the Western Conference. When we come back, we look at the East. There's already been a lot of news regarding some Eastern Conference series, a couple injuries that are going to wreak some havoc potentially. Talk about the East next. You're listening to the NHL This Week, the Illegal Curve Playoff Preview Show on TSN 1290.
As a two-time Olympic gold medalist, Shea Weber's winning pedigree goes hand-in-hand with his formidable on-ice contributions at even strength and special teams. This is Weber's time of year and why the Canadians acquired him, to lead, stabilize, and inspire.
John Liu of TSN talking about Shea Weber. Very true words, Shea Weber, playoff demon. First time in the playoffs for the Montreal Canadiens after so many years on the back end of the Nashville Predators. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Our playoff preview show continues. We've focused on the West. We now focus on the East. Of course, this segment brought to you by our friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. We start our look at the Eastern Conference with the Montreal Canadiens New York Rangers series, sort of one of the most interesting series, because even though it technically would be the, you know, it's the first place team in the Atlantic Division versus the first wild card team, both these teams are so evenly ranked in terms of points, having the Rangers having had such a great year but playing in the juggernaut Metropolitan Division. Also, Carey Price versus Henrik Lundqvist. Talk about a great goaltending matchup. And, of course, the last time these two teams faced each other in the playoffs, Chris Kreider running over Carey Price, knocking him out of the playoffs for the remainder of the series. The Rangers go on to make their way to the Stanley Cup Finals, where they lost to the Los Angeles Kings. This is going to be a tremendous series between two very quick teams in the Rangers and the Canadiens.
Yeah, the name of the game is for sure speed, Drew, and I don't think that you could say there's a heavy favorite in this series either, because when you talk about the New York Rangers, you'd give them the advantage as far as the offense goes, even though the last 10 or 15 games of the year they struggled. They only won three of their last 10 games. Mm-hmm. Montreal obviously won the season series, winning two of the three games. But yes, you mentioned it. The Rangers finished fourth in the Metro. Only 1 point separates these two teams, right? When you look at possession, the Rangers have the worst possession numbers of any team that made the playoffs, so a lot of people are giving Montreal the advantage as far as that goes. But when you talk about the Montreal Canadiens, with the exception of Alexei Emelin, who won't play game one, he might return this series. So that means they're going to rely heavily on Jordy Benn, paired up with Jeff Petrie on that second pair. You've got Andre Markov and Shea Weber on that top pair. So for me, that's a big key. Andre Markov and Shea Weber, I imagine, are going to be paired up against the line of Kreider, Stepan, and Zuccarello. And, I mean, that's a bona fide top line. That line can score a lot of goals. You know, Matt Zuccarello is really fast, and so is Chris Kreider. As far as, you know, the ramifications from 2014, I think both sides downplayed it, guys. But, again, I mean, for me, I'm looking forward to this series probably the most. And Calgary and Anaheim is probably second as far as the series I'm really looking forward to watching, and that's because you do have the history there, and you love to have those rivalries, right? Original six rivals. The New York Rangers, you know, you talk about teams that really have to win now. Drew, you mentioned the Minnesota Wild last segment. This New York Rangers team does not have a lot in the cupboard as far as young prospects go.
Mm-hmm.
And
they
this
traded
team,
them all.
This, exactly, and this team has to win. We know that they wanted Kevin Shattenkirk at the trade deadline. They lost out to Washington, and this group of defensemen, I think, is not as good as it once was, certainly not as good as it was in 2014, the year that they beat the Habs in the second round and then went on it was the third round, and they went on to the Stanley Cup Finals and lost to the LA Kings. But, you know, Mark Stahl, Dan Girardi, Ryan McDonagh, Dan Girardi's actually had a pretty rough year. Mm-hmm. Brady Shea, I think, has done a good job in his early career. But Montreal, again, you know, they loaded up at the trade deadline. They made the most moves of any team. And maybe, you know, the major moves happened in the offseason, Drew, with Alex Radulov. And you mentioned Shea Weber earlier. But you bring in guys like Dwight King and Steve Ott. And I think for me, one of the key players in this series is Alex Galchenyuk. And Alex Galchenyuk is a guy that they moved from center to wing and then back to center, and they've had him at wing, and right now he's playing on the third line. Sometimes they've had him on the top line. So for me, he's kind of the X factor of the series, and it's going to be interesting to see how Philip Deneau handles centering that top line with Max Pacioretty and Alex Radulov. Deneau's had a very underrated year, but again, he doesn't have any playoff experience, and you know he's most likely going to be going up against either Mika Zibanejad or Derek Stepan. They've got a lot more playoff experience, especially when you're talking about Derek Stepan, right? So mm-hmm. I give the advantage to the Habs in net. Carey Price is a better goaltender than Henrik Lundqvist. I think even though Henrik Lundqvist had a decent year, I think his better days are behind him. And then when you talk about defense, that's the biggest difference for me between this year and especially under Claude Julien, Drew. If you look at the statistics as far as shot suppression and how they've played defensively, they've really tightened up under Claude Julien. And we know that's what he was so good at with Boston. So mm-hmm. It's going to be a very even series again. I think we're going to see some OTs in this series, Sean.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one a lot. Mostly because of the Kreider-Price history and
Another series like we spoke about with Calgary and Anaheim, another series that they've had recent playoff history.
Yeah, some underlying animosity, we'll say. It. And for me, I think it is absolutely critical for the Montreal Canadiens to protect Carey Price. And they've did a real good job this year in bringing in some big boys to clear the front of the net. You're looking at names like Dwight King, Steve Ott, Andreas Martinsson, Shea Weber.
Andrew Shaw, not the biggest guy,
but he's a tenacious bugger. Mm-hmm. Jordy Benn, guys that will muck it up in their defensive zone, guys that if you stand in front of their perennial all-star goaltender, you're going to pay the price.
Well, it's a fascinating matchup. The Rangers fourth overall in the NHL in goals for with 253 goals. The Canadiens fourth overall in goals against with 198 goals against. So it is sort of the classic offense versus defense matchup. You know, my concern if I'm a Montreal Canadian fan is who's getting me that key goal when I need it? I don't know that the Habs offense, that's sort of where they leave me with a little bit of concern is, you know, how many goals against, you know, Carey Price is obviously is a phenomenal goalie. But are the Habs going to be able to get three goals past Henrik Lundqvist on a game-in, game-out basis? I mean, it's not, you know, it's pretty, a lot of pressure to put on Carey Price. Where are the Habs going to get those key goals when they need them from?
Right, and Claude Julien's going to lean heavily on Max Pacioretty's line with Alex Radulov and Philip Deneau, but he's also going to depend on Paul Byron, who had a breakout season with mm-hmm. 22 goals this year. And, mm-hmm. you know, we know that Shea Weber can provide some offense, especially on the power play. But you're right, Drew. I mean, the Montreal Canadiens certainly don't have the high-end talent of a team like Washington or Pittsburgh, but certainly they can put the puck in the net. The New York Rangers, I would say, have more forward depth, but Montreal, when you talk about, I believe they had six guys over 15 goals or more. They had five guys with 15 goals or more. So they do have balanced scoring in that sense that you don't see that disparity like you would maybe see on a team like Chicago, Or we mentioned Washington or Pittsburgh with that top-end talent with guys like Crosby, Ovechkin, Backstrom. But you're right. I mean, Pacioretty, Radulov, Galchenyuk, these guys are going to have to be the game-breakers. I look at a guy like Brendan Gallagher as well. And Brendan Gallagher is a guy that, by all accounts, has not had a very good year. I believe he only had 10 goals this year. We should say that he missed some time to injury. I think he missed around 20 games. But for me, Brendan Gallagher is going to be a big key because he's not on that top line anymore. So when you're talking about the line, the primary scoring line, it's not Brendan Gallagher's line, but Plekanec, Byron, and Gallagher to me is just as important. So it's going to be a very interesting series, Drew. I agree with you. This is probably just as close as the St. Louis-Minnesota Wild series. I'm going to take Montreal in this series. Okay. I'm going to take them in six.
Hang on. Let me write that down. Ezzy says Montreal in six. And it's no bias there because you used to live in Montreal briefly, right?
I don't know if 3 months really counts, but
so it counts in my books. That's all that matters. Sean, your sort of thoughts and how it affects your opinion on who's going to be victorious at the end of this at this series.
Well, you look at the record of the Habs since hiring Claude Julien, 16-7-1 since he joined the Habs organization. So they're obviously playing inspired behind their new boss. He's implemented some systems that are working. Carey Price seemed to have kind of turned the corner. Maybe there was a little bit of bad blood between Michel Therrien and Carey Price. We saw that that highly publicized stare down when he was yanked. So who knows what was going through the mind of Carey Price? Maybe a little redemption, maybe showing his teammates that I still got it, guys, don't worry. But for me, you talk about the speed, and we talked about Paul Byron. On the other end, Michael Grabner, another guy that just has tremendous speed. And a really interesting fact when I was looking up some notes for this segment, Paul Byron.
You do research?
I try.
Attaboy, that's what we like
to
hear.
It's an excuse to drink coffee.
Attaboy.
Paul Byron, 22 goals this season. Michael Grabner, 27. All of those goals, even strength. So they know how to get the puck in the net when it is 5-on-5, which is crucial because power plays, if you're not getting on the man advantage, you still got to score in the postseason. So if you can score 5-on-5, key. Also, Steve Alakette joined the station on the roundtable yesterday, and he was talking, the goaltender analyst,
sure,
he was talking about how when goaltenders, and he cited Henrik Lundqvist, are becoming that tweener age around mid-low 30s, they kind of start to lose their identity because the body doesn't react the way it used to. And they kind of start to second-guess their actions and everything that was kind of taught to them and their innate abilities. And when you look at a guy like Brendan Gallagher and Andrew Shaw, guys that are going to make Henrik Lundqvist's night absolutely miserable net front, it's going to be a real tough task for the New York Rangers goaltender. I have Habs in seven.
And Sean, I don't think you want to simplify it down to Henrik Lundqvist versus Carey Price, who plays better, but I think it is going to come down to that because, let's be honest, Lundqvist is not a spring chicken anymore. He's 35 years old. His numbers have been worse this year compared to last year. Carey Price, you mentioned under Claude Julien, Carey Price, especially on the PK, but he still had a very good year. So I think it is going to come down to that. And this New York Rangers team is not as good defensively as it was 3 years ago, the last time these two teams played. I mentioned that earlier, Drew. So, you know, this Rangers team, D has been the staple of this team, but now they've kind of opened it up. They're more of a transition team. If you look at the way they've scored this year, a lot of their goals come off of transition. And I don't think they're a very difficult team to play against. Sean mentioned the acquisitions that the Montreal Canadiens have made them a tougher team to play against. Andrew Shaw being front and center. Dwight King's another guy that has two Stanley Cups. So I think Montreal is going to win this series, but it's going to be close. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to seven, Drew.
Ezzy, you have Montreal in six. Sean, you have Montreal in seven. I have the Rangers in seven in this one. I just think the Habs' lack of offense is going to come back to bite them at some point in this series. I know that Carey Price is otherworldly, but I don't know that he's going to be able to do it for four out of seven games. I think the Rangers end up squeaking this one out in seven. When we come back, we look at the Senators and the Bruins. Already a lot of news in that series. We tell you about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
First time ever the Ottawa Senators will meet the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup playoffs, which is kind of bizarre considering both teams have made the playoffs most of the time the last two decades. Now, no one was sure either team would make it this year, except as Brent Wallace tells us, the Senators general manager.
It was a year ago today that I felt that this team was a playoff team. We're in the playoffs. Time to make some noise.
Senators certainly want to make some noise in their first round playoff matchup against the Boston Bruins. The Senators, of course, finished second in the Eastern Conference, in the Atlantic Division, facing the Boston Bruins, who finished third. That game underway already in Ottawa. Want to make note, first and foremost, David Krejci of the Boston Bruins, not dressed, not in the lineup for the Bruins tonight, banged up, injured. So that's certainly a huge loss for the Bruins. This is a banged up Bruins team's got some severe injuries on the back end. Charlie McAvoy making his playoff debut, former first-round pick of the Bruins. He's paired up with Zdeno Chara. I think I saw something earlier today, and I may be wrong when I quote this, that Chara played his first NHL game before McAvoy was even born, which goes to show you about the rookie and the veteran on the Bruins' back end. Also in that game, Colin Wilson just limps off the ice after being the victim of a knee-on-knee hit, a dirty hit, in my estimation, by Mark I can't pronounce his name.
Borowiecki.
That name drives me crazy. He needs to change his name. But Mark Borowiecki, knee-on-knee with Colin Miller, he limps off. So already some fireworks between the Bruins and the Senators. The Senators won that season series, swept that season series by a 4-game-to-none margin. You think there's any, you know, does winning four out of four against the division rival in the regular season, does that matter at all come playoff time in your estimation, Ez?
No, I don't think it does. And, you know, I also think that this is going to be a very even series. And, you know, the Bruins and Senators were only separated by 3 points, Drew. Mm-hmm. And to me, a big concern is those injuries, right? You're talking about Torrey Krug, Brandon Carlo, and you mentioned Charlie McAvoy. And, you know, Kevin Miller is going to go on a pair with Colin Miller, the third pairing for the Boston Bruins. As you mentioned, that game's already started here. But I think when you talk about David Krejci, I mean, that's your second-line center behind Patrice Bergeron, right? Mm-hmm. And Ryan Spooner's actually done a really good job this year. He's probably had his best year at the NHL level, and he's also been very good on the power play for the Boston Bruins. Boston Bruins are the top possession team in the league, after the LA Kings, the top possession team of all the playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the advantage there. Certainly, Ottawa's not a very good possession team. To me, that's what it's going to be about, and it's going to be a goaltending battle. Tuukka Rask versus Craig Anderson have both had very good years. Tuukka Rask had a weird stretch between January and March where he really struggled. He was excellent in the first half of the season and was excellent the last month of the season, but he struggled in that kind of middle part of the season. So if you're looking for advantages, I mean, the top line, I'd give the advantage. Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and whether it's David Backes or David Pastrnak on that line, that's a better line than Ottawa's top line, which is usually a combination of Mike Hoffman, Mark Stone, and either Kyle Turris or J.G. Pageau. But the Ottawa Senators have balanced scoring, though. And Clark MacArthur only played a few games there at the end of the year, and they've already got him slotted on the first line.
Is
he going to have an impact, right?
He's had concussion issues going back.
He hasn't played the last 2 years.
That's pretty much. It's been 2 years since he really played meaningful action. He got concussed in the in practice by a teammate.
Right, and Ottawa also, Mark Bethod has been out since the end of March from that slash on Sidney Crosby, right?
Where he lost his finger, of his finger.
And Erik Karlsson missed a little bit of time, even though he's healthy. So are they going to rely more on a guy like Dion Phaneuf to shut down that top line of Boston? It's a very evenly matched series here, guys, and it's tough to really see if either team has an advantage.
Two teams with new head coaches. You know, obviously the Bruins fired Claude Julien earlier in the season. Bruce Cassidy making his first return to the playoffs. I don't think he's been to the playoffs it's been a while since he was there with Washington a number of years ago. Guy Boucher, of course, is the Ottawa head coach this season. A good first year. You think Ottawa, and you used to think offense, and what Boucher has been able to do so effectively is get them to buy in on the defensive side of things, not something you typically thought Erik Karlsson and defense foremost, but that's what Guy Boucher, he's done a great job with the Senators, certainly in the conversation, I would think, for a Jack Adams nomination this season.
Yeah, it's been impressive what Guy Boucher has been able to do. He's shored up the Ottawa Senators' defensive game wholeheartedly. We saw him do the exact same thing when he joined the Tampa Bay Lightning and they made their cup run. And you look at, you talk scoring, and you look at this Ottawa Senators roster, Mike Hoffman, I mean, how many times have we seen that wicked wrister get unleashed on the Jets over the years? But then you look at a guy like Mark Stone, who enters the postseason. And, you know, from all accounts, all we've heard about Mark Stone is that he can be an elite shooter and an elite player in this league. hasn't scored a goal in 15 games entering the postseason. This is a guy that needs to get the monkey off his back. And speaking of scoring some, Bobby Ryan, also a guy who will probably want to put the puck in the net a few times, start feeling good about himself.
Mm-hmm. So He's had a rough couple seasons.
Oh, yeah. So I think just from a scoring perspective, I think it is critical that the Ottawa Senators' big guns score early and they can get kind of just take a little bit of pressure off themselves and they can play a little bit like they're used to and put the puck in the net. As for Erik Karlsson, you want to talk about a nagging injury on a guy that uses his speed and his lateral ability better than anyone in the league. Erik Karlsson dealing with a foot injury. He was seen kind of doing the edge swirls in the pregame skate. So he's obviously testing his foot. It's not 100%. And you want to talk about a limitation for a guy that can fly. Hopefully Erik Karlsson not too hindered by this foot injury.
You look at the Bruins' defense, and you mentioned the injuries, and we talked about it. And, you know, Brandon Carlo, Torrey Krug, mm-hmm. both out of the mm-hmm. lineup.
Krug is huge.
They suffer injuries towards the end of the season. We don't know the status of Colin Miller after he just left in the second period. Can the Bruins withstand three injuries to their back end, you know, on a in the course of a seven-game series? If Krug and Carlo and Miller, if they're out for, you know, lengthy periods of time, if they're not factors in the series, is that going to be what you would determine as a difference maker that gives Ottawa maybe an advantage in being ultimately victorious in this series?
Well, it depends how Charlie McAvoy does. Mm-hmm. And by all accounts, he had an excellent season in NCAA hockey. But when mm-hmm. you consider, you know, what he is in front of him, I mean, he's stepping in to his first, not only his first NHL game, but the first game of a round one series, right? So, I mean, that is going to be the huge key. But no, Drew, I don't think that if Torrey Krug and Brandon Carlo, a rookie, of course, just like Charlie McAvoy, mm-hmm. did a very good job playing most of the year in a top four role. So I don't think that they can succeed without those two defensemen if they're out for the entire series. If they miss one or two games, that's fine. But Torrey Krug is a guy who quarterbacks the power play. He had a very good year for the Boston Bruins. So, I still think they can win this series if they're only out for a couple of games. And again, Tuukka Rask, I mean, I do think they have the advantage there in net over Craig Anderson, even though Craig Anderson had an excellent season, and so did Mike Condon as well. So they've got a great 1-2 punch there. But, you know, it's really tough to find anything that really separates these two teams in a big way, right? And for me, it really is going to come down to the top line of the Boston Bruins. David Pastrnak had an excellent season mm-hmm. in his second full NHL season. And I do think guys like David Backes, the veteran experience that guys like David Backes and Patrice Bergeron and Brad Marchand and David Krejci, to me, David Krejci's injury is a bigger concern because we didn't expect him to miss game one.
There was no word that he was even banged up. It just sort of, you know, when we started the show this evening, it just all of a sudden Krejci out of the lineup for the Bruins, that really did come out of nowhere. An interesting series, certainly, between the Bruins and the Senators, the first time that these two teams have met in the playoffs. Ezzy, how do you see it unfolding over the course of seven or fewer games?
We should mention, we haven't even talked about Drew Stafford. If the Bruins do win round one, that trade turns into a fourth-round pick for the Jets.
Getting better by the game, potentially.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bruins in this series. And, you know, I kind of went back and forth between the Bruins and the Senators, but I've just been very underwhelmed when I've watched the Ottawa Senators this year.
Saw them here in Winnipeg just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and you know, they're not a very difficult team to play against. They do have balanced scoring, and I like the way Guy Boucher has them thinking D first, blocking shots, and all of that. I mean, the only way I see them winning the series if Craig Anderson outplays Tuukka Rask, that can apply to any series, Drew.
Sure.
And especially if Erik Karlsson does produce the way he's capable of producing, I think they can make this a longer series. But I'm going to go Boston in six.
Boston in six for Mr. Ginsburg. Sean Assor, your prediction, please.
Well, I don't think we've even talked about Brad Marchand returning from suspension and coming back.
Will he be able to last seven games without getting another suspension?
Did the suspension kind of hit the reset button for Brad Marchand and he can kind of focus on the elite goal scoring that we've seen this year? Or did it kind of put a little bit of gasoline on the fire? And when everything gets ramped up in the postseason and you're expected to finish every hit and play at the utmost of physical,
Will be okay. If he finishes every spear, that's when it's going to be a problem.
Or every slew foot or every low bridge. But you put Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron together, that is a deadly playoff combo. We've seen it year in and year out. Throw David Backes on that line. And as you talked about it, David Pastrnak, kind of the untested hero in this whole situation, breakout season, had a phenomenal scoring season, and it'll be really interesting to see if he can push that forward into the postseason. I have Boston in seven.
Boston in seven for Sean. I will go against both of you. It's nothing personal, gentlemen. I'm going to have the Ottawa Senators in six games. I think something about the Bruins and their injuries, and I look at them again as another team that with the midseason coaching change that they might just sort of be happy to have made it to the playoffs. Bruce Cassidy, not much expected of them. Things sort of up in the air a little bit. I'm not sure that the Bruins have the horses to make a significant run in the playoffs at this point. I think the Ottawa Senators, they've been sort of unexpected all season long. I don't think anybody really thought of the Senators necessarily as a playoff team this year.
I did pick them.
You did, but you are, of course, clairvoyant at the very least. So
I also picked Dallas and Florida in the Stanley Cup Final, though.
The clairvoyance skips a beat every
limited,
now and
it's
then.
It's a limited clairvoyance.
No, hey, I'm more than happy to point out my mistakes in addition to my my correct predictions.
Yeah.
And we'll have to wait till the end of the show when we give our Stanley Cup Final predictions. But
right.
It's not going to be Dallas.
Dallas
and Florida are not
going to
be in there.
Okay, I have the Senators in six, so that's my prediction for that series. When we come back, Joe Beninati, he's the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster. He joins us next to talk about the Capitals and the Leafs. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We continue with our NHL playoff preview. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Joe Beninati. Joe is the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster on CSN Mid-Atlantic. Joe, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
Drew, Sean, Ezzy, no problem. Best time of the year. Let's roll it out there, boys. Let's go.
Absolutely. Let's go. Tomorrow night it starts in the U.S. nation's capital with the Leafs visiting the Washington Capitals. Joe, you know, year in and year out, the Washington Capitals are a dominant regular season team, and then they get to the playoffs, and for whatever reason, there's a bugaboo. Last year, they ran into a red-hot Pittsburgh Penguins team. They couldn't get past it, past them. You look at the Capitals this year, the best team in the Eastern Conference. You look at their chief opponents in the East, the Penguins banged up on the back end. Of course, they still have Crosby and Malkin. Is this the year where sort of everything is playing out in the Capitals' favor, that this should be the season they're able to get all the way to the Stanley Cup Finals?
I'll be honest with you. I thought that was last year. And I think it's a better team this year. So the answer to your question is yes. But I thought the same of this squad at this time last year as I do right now. Only, I guess I see the improvements overall defensively. I can see the additional depth that everybody points to as to why they figure Washington to be a favorite and a major contender in the East. I understand all of that, but that team last year was so good for so long and didn't get beat by a whole lot in that Pittsburgh series, eliminated in six. They were very, very tight games. And I felt at that time that the winner of that series was going to do very, very well, and it turned out to be Pittsburgh's year. This season, I know where you're coming from, and with 55 wins and 118 points and playing as well as they did down the stretch, in my 23 years now in Washington, I've never seen a Capitals team better prepared to make a long run. Fingers crossed they're about to have two more months of work.
Joe, is this series between the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Washington Capitals ultimately going to come down to the Washington Capitals just score too much and the Toronto Maple Leafs just aren't going to be able to handle it, especially with Nikita Zaitsev looking like he could miss the entire series?
We get the sense that Washington's forwards are going to be a little bit too much for Toronto on the back end, but that, I think, is oversimplifying things. It wouldn't have mattered if it was Toronto or Boston, per se, in this first round for Washington. I think they believe if they execute to their level that they should be decisively in front of those teams. Now, am I saying that they're arrogant? No. I'm saying they're confident, and they should be. Down the stretch, guys, I think they were 11-2-1 in the final 14 games, but there are two games to me that really stood out. The first 40 minutes of a game late in the season with Columbus, and an entire game that they played at Air Canada Centre in Toronto. In those two particular games and in those stretches, the opposition barely had the puck. And if you can do that, especially in this series against Toronto, and keep it away from all those talented youngsters, then Washington should have its say in this series.
Joe, Evgeny Kuznetsov is a guy that's really intriguing entering this postseason. You know, it was well documented last year. He was not happy with the way he performed in the postseason. How much pressure is this guy putting on himself right now to show he can get it done in the later parts of the year?
I think he's one of the linchpins for Washington's success. He has to be. Think back to 2015. It was really an emergence for Evgeny Kuznetsov in the series against the New York Islanders. I think that was where he blossomed and showed a great deal of his would-be talent. Last season, he leads the team in points and has a phenomenal regular season, although it started to tail off, guys. The last 6 weeks to a month of that regular season, he wasn't himself. And I don't know if it was an injury. I don't know what it was. But he wasn't nearly the producer that he needs to be in the postseason. And he knows that this time around. And the better he plays, the better the rest of Washington's offense will click. If that makes sense, when he's playing well, when that second line is going great guns with Johansson and Williams, it makes for defensive matchup nightmares for the opposition. Because you start to focus upon, well, who do I focus upon? Is it Backstrom's line? Is it Kuznetsov's line? And then now the depth of scoring extends to the third and fourth group. But to me, if Kuznetsov is himself, if Kuznetsov is making plays, more importantly, if he's willing to go into high traffic areas, then Washington can be incredibly tough to defend. More than anything, I think it's the traffic areas for Kuznetsov, who would love for the league to be played 3-on-3 with wide open ice and an all-star game type format. But the playoffs aren't that. He knows he's got to get his nose dirty this season, and I believe he will.
Joe Beninati is our guest on NHL This Week. He's the Washington Capitals play-by-play broadcaster on CSN Mid-Atlantic. We're talking about the Capitals and the Leafs. Their playoff series gets underway tomorrow in Washington. Joe, Alex Ovechkin, bit of a down regular season for him. If you look at the raw goals, only 33, the fewest in a full season since 2010-11. Played a couple minutes fewer this season than per game than he did last year. Do you think that extra rest and the fact that he's actually been, you know, improving and sort of peaking over the last, you know, 15 regular season games, do you see a different Alex Ovechkin entering this playoffs than you have in previous years?
I think a lot of it has to do with a mentality. More than anything, this particular season, I think when Alex Ovechkin reflects back upon his Stanley Cup playoff career, as an individual, his point totals are there. I mean, he's nearly a point-per-game guy in his Stanley Cup playoff career. He's a pretty much a goal-every-other-game kind of guy in his Stanley Cup playoff career. But collectively, as a team, he hasn't been able to push his group past the second round. This season, I see a much greater commitment, not only from number eight, but from this entire group, which senses, I think, that this is their best chance as a collective group to go forward. Because, and this is for a problem for the summertime, but come free agency, come expansion draft, etc., this particular Capitals squad is likely to be fractured a bit. There are guys that are going to need to get paid, and I don't think they'll be able to fit it all under one salary cap in D.C. So I've seen this team grow up together. Alex has been the leader, the guy who's under the spotlight the most, the man who feels the pressure the most. And I think more than any season, especially in the last few weeks and months, I've seen Ovechkin get back to perhaps his best shape, I think from a physical fitness standpoint, in the last month than he was been in perhaps the entire year. And I know athletes tend to peak in prime as we get towards the most important tournament in the sport, but I think a lot of what you said at the beginning was with the minutes being down, Barry Trotz, by design, trying to keep Alex fresher, longer, and I fully expect him to be shot out of a cannon tomorrow night.
Joe, I think you'd agree that playoff matchups, playoff series, I should say, usually come down to matchups and depth. How important is that line of Lars Eller, Brett Connolly, Andre Burakovsky going to be for the Capitals this year in the playoffs?
Yeah, it's a good pickup, and it's funny because you sit there and you think about the Pittsburgh Penguins last year, and I don't consider Phil Kessel a third liner, but Phil was playing on a, quote, third line for Pittsburgh, and that just tells you how deep the Penguins were when the time was right, and they could get goals from Hagelin, Bonino, and Kessel. That's a pretty darn good third line. Connolly, Eller, and Burakovsky, back in January, February, when the Caps were playing their absolute best, they were off the charts, guys. They were playing so incredibly well, and you could count on them for offensive chances and production. And I'm not saying that you won't in this postseason. I think Burakovsky is a blossoming 30-goal scorer eventually. But what's happened as the season's gone along, Barry Trotz seems to trust and employ the Winnick-Beagle-Wilson line even more. I'm not sure which is the third line and which is the fourth line anymore. But Connolly, Eller, and Burakovsky have the most natural offensive gifts of those two trios, and I do expect them after some time to cycle the devil out of the Maple Leafs. They work their tails off, and that becomes just a physical grind to play against Washington. Not only are they highly skilled, but the Caps do have good size, and they wear on you.
Joe, obviously we can't overstate the importance of Braden Holtby for the Washington Capitals. With such a young Maple Leafs team and all the favor in heading Washington's way, just at least from the outside, you'd expect Toronto to maybe want to get into the grill of Braden Holtby, make his life miserable through these series. I think of players like, you know, Nazem Kadri, Leo Komarov, that'll drive the net hard and make a real tough evening for Braden Holtby as the series wears on. How does the goaltender like Braden Holtby handle guys in his grill and in his crease and disrupting, you know, getting in his ways? Mentally, is he able to just brush that aside, or does that rattle him? How do you think he expects to handle that?
I fully expect that to happen. I've seen James Van Riemsdyk create a storm around the Washington goal. He's very rangy, lots of tip plays and redirects and screens. I think he's pivotal on their power play setup. But you're right, Komarov and Kadri are going to be doing their darndest to irritate Braden. And if this was 5, 6, 7 years ago, when Braden Holtby was likely to explode behind that mask, I'd be concerned. But I think the mental toughness side of Holtby has become almost as good as his athletic ability. He's a phenomenal athlete, and that's why he's been a Vezina Trophy candidate the past couple of seasons. But more than anything, I think he's mellowed to the point where his concentration is so good that I don't think you will get under his skin. Will they perturb him? Will they irritate? Sure, but not get him off of his game. Never. This is the kind of player who will sit there and tell you, you know, and again, as far as you can believe this, but Braden's mantra is he wants to play and focus and fixate on a game that's in February as much as he will for game one tomorrow night. And he wants to be at his best for a November game in Florida as he will want to be for a game six against Pittsburgh. That's his mentality. He wants to keep it that way. Every game is of that importance to him, and he won't allow people to fluster him.
Joe, I know you've heard this question before, not only this year, but last year. If the Washington Capitals don't win the Stanley Cup this year, is the entire season a disappointment?
Considering this two-year run, and considering that I thought they were a cup contender slash winner last year, didn't get it done, I have seen them become incredibly motivated by that disappointment of last year and by the collective disappointments. Now, the Capitals have a haunted playoff history. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not even referring to the ones of the 80s. I'm talking to the Ovechkin era. If you fail again, it's going to be a crumbling feeling for sure, and especially with what looms on the horizon from a personnel standpoint. But I don't think you can take away from 55 wins and 118 points, 32 wins at home. They played beautifully. What matters to them the most, though, is the next 2 months. And if they fall short again, it will be a very, very painful experience for them.
Joe Beninati covers the Washington Capitals as the play-by-play broadcaster for CSN Mid-Atlantic. The Capitals and Leafs series gets underway tomorrow in the U.S. nation's capital. Joe, thanks for doing this. Have a great call of the series. Always appreciate your time and your insight.
Guys, my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
Take care, Joe. We'll do it again soon. Gentlemen, you heard from Joe for the last 15 or so minutes. Give some great insight. Guy who knows the team, the Capitals, better than anybody else. Your thoughts on the series between the Leafs and the Capitals?
Yeah, guys, I could see the Leafs maybe winning a game or two in this series, but I just don't think they have the defensive depth to match up against the Washington Capitals. I mean, we talked about it with Joe Beninati. You're talking about Backstrom, Ovechkin, and Oshie, probably, if not the best line, a top three line in the NHL. And then if you're matching up, let's say, Morgan Rielly and Connor Carrick against that line, then Jake Gardner was usually playing with Nikita Zaitsev. Actually, Zaitsev was playing with Morgan Rielly, mm-hmm. but it's really going to be tough for the Leafs D to match up against the Capitals forward depth. You're going to have Nazem Kadri, imagine, getting in Nicholas Backstrom and Alexander Ovechkin's face. Kadri has really developed in the last couple mm-hmm. of years as one of the top defensive forwards in the game, but Brett Connolly, Lars Eller, Andre Burakovsky is a really good third line. So you're going to see Martin Marincin replace Zaitsev in the lineup. I just don't see the Leafs winning more than two games. I'm going to go Caps in six.
Sean?
Really interesting quote by Mike Babcock. He said that when he first arrived to Detroit, he said, "We're a top team and the pressure on top is unmistakable. We couldn't pass or skate in the playoffs." It's going to be real interesting to see if the Caps can handle that. I think they can. I think it's a young Leafs team. We didn't even mention Austin Matthews. It's kind of refreshing to talk about the Leafs and not dropping Austin Matthews.
I'm sure that our friends at 10:50 in Toronto are talking about Austin Matthews more than enough that we don't really need to talk about him.
I got Caps in five.
Sorry, Drew, just to interrupt. It's actually not Carrick with Morgan Rielly. Actually, based on the D pairings at practice, it's Matt Hunwick with Morgan Rielly, and then you've got Roman Polak and Jake Gardner, and then your third pair is Marincin and Carrick. So, I mean, those D pairings are just not going to cut it. You need Zaitsev, and I realize Zaitsev is an undrafted rookie, but Zaitsev was playing very good hockey, playing 20-plus minutes for the Leafs, and without Zaitsev, if they did have Zaitsev, maybe I see the series going a little bit longer, but even with Zaitsev, I could see the series being over in five or six.
Well, you said six before, so what's it going to be, five or
six?
No,
six. I'm going six.
Sean, you have five.
Yeah.
I will say this is a sweep. The Caps in four.
Ooh,
the Leafs.
Sweep.
Yeah, the Capitals, to me, look like a team on the mission. I think they see the path to the Stanley Cup is there for them, more so even than it was last year with the Penguins and their injuries, and what I'm expecting to be a dramatic series between the Penguins and the Blue Jackets. I think it's the Capitals in four.
Drew, let me switch it to five because I just realized yesterday I tweeted out Washington in five.
Oh, so you want to be consistent.
Let me stay consistent with my tweets.
Okay, don't want to be call you a liar. When we come back, one final series. It is the Blue Jackets and the Penguins. We talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Pittsburgh number two in the Metro and Columbus number three. Columbus really not playing their best hockey as of late. They had that big comeback win on Sunday against Toronto, as we just mentioned. But as you check out the tail of the tape right here, a lot of check marks in the Penguins column.
Well, Sergei Bobrovsky is fantastic, so I have to give him the edge for the Columbus Blue Jackets, even though I do like Matt Murray. But the forward depth for Pittsburgh is very good. They can roll four lines at you, and they come with a lot of speed. Even without Chris Letang, I still like the defensive depth that they have.
One final segment, one final series, eight segments, eight series. That's how we do it here on the NHL playoff preview spectacular. Want to make a quick note about the Bruins and the Senators. Bruins, zero shots on goal in the second period. Not sure that that's a great recipe for success long-term in the playoffs in any event. The Penguins and the Blue Jackets, they're the final series for us to talk about on this Wednesday evening. First, the news before game one, Matt Murray all in net, getting ready, stretching, getting set to be the starting goaltender for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Well, he pulls something. He pulls a muscle. He's not even dressed for the Pittsburgh Penguins in tonight's game one. Marc-Andre Fleury is the starting goalie for the Penguins tonight. Who knows about the foreseeable future? So again, Matt Murray going down. And this was a sort of a battle of the goaltender. Sergei Bobrovsky was tremendous for the Blue Jackets all season long. These are two very evenly matched teams. And the Blue Jackets, the matchup, I think, of all the playoffs, the matchup I'm most fascinated with is Brandon Dubinsky versus Sidney Crosby. They've had storied rivalries going on now for probably close to a decade, back to Dubinsky's time with the New York Rangers, and we know that he's very skilled at getting under Crosby's skin. That is probably the number one matchup I'm watching in all of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Yeah, this is a very intriguing series, Drew. You mentioned when they played back in 2014, the Penguins won in six, but this is a much better Columbus Blue Jackets team, and if Sergei Bobrovsky doesn't win the Vezina Trophy this year, he's at the very least going to be a finalist. He's probably also going to get some Hart Trophy consideration. For me, the advantage for Columbus is in net, and with Chris Letang out of the lineup, I got to give Columbus the edge on defense as well. And mm-hmm. when you talk about Columbus, this is a much better defensive team. And you know, you've heard a lot about Zach Werenski there this year, but you know, Seth Jones is a guy on that top pair who really stands out to me. He's really turned into not just a top pairing defenseman, but he's turned into, I think, a top 20 defenseman in the NHL. He might be on his way to being a top 10 defenseman and a future Norris Trophy candidate for a guy that many thought would go first overall in 2013. He ended up going number four. But then you look down the lineup, at Jack Johnson and David Savard have done a really nice job. They're going to miss Ryan Murray, and you know, Ryan Murray is a guy who went second overall, and not many people talk about him. He's not a guy that scores a lot, but he's had a very nice year this year. He missed a lot of time early in his career, Drew. Mm-hmm. So Marcus Nutavera is going to take his place on the third line, and that's where I think the Penguins have the advantage on the Columbus Blue Jackets in this series. And we were just talking to Joe Beninati about it. The third line of the Pittsburgh Penguins with Bonino, Hornqvist, and Scott Wilson, I mean, with the exception of maybe that Eller, Burakovsky, Connolly line on Washington, has to be considered one of the top third lines in all of the NHL. And, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets certainly don't have the star power. Let's be honest, guys. The Columbus Blue Jackets, I forget exactly how many 20-goal and 15-goal scorers they had, but they had a lot. On any given night, you're expecting, you know, the regulars like Nick Foligno and Brandon Saad and Cam Atkinson to score goals. But on one night, it can be Scott Hartnell. On the other night, it could be Boone Jenner. I mean, these guys have probably the most balanced scoring in the NHL. So Pittsburgh has the star power with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Phil Kessel. And that's where I think, again, Pittsburgh has the advantage. Columbus has probably, you know, got a little bit more spread out offense. But then, as we talked about, I mean, a guy like Nick Bonino is on your third line. Patrick Hornqvist had a pretty good year. So they were separated by 3 points, guys, in the regular mm-hmm. season, right? Mm-hmm. That's not a lot. So, you know, if Sergei Bobrovsky, I'll say this much, Drew, if he can steal one or two games, I could see this series going to seven. But I do think Pittsburgh is ultimately going to win the series because they have the best offense in the league.
Sean?
I completely agree with you, Ezzy. I think that the Pittsburgh Penguins' offense is by far their greatest weapon, regardless if it's Matt Murray or Marc-Andre Fleury. Fleury, obviously, not the greatest of goaltenders as of late, but Murray has been kind of handling the load. He's hurt now, but Fleury did win them a cup, made some tremendous saves in that cup run. But when you look at the forwards, to me, for the Pittsburgh Penguins, it all revolves around discipline. And if Columbus has any chance of making it out of this series, they have to stay out of the penalty box and they have to limit the Pittsburgh Penguins' power play, because when you've got guys like Kessel, Malkin, now Connor Sheary, Jake Guentzel, Sidney Crosby, Patrick Hornqvist, Nick Bonino, you know, like, you can roll so many variations of your power play and different looks, and it's going to be a real tough task if guys like Brandon Dubinsky, we mentioned Brandon Dubinsky, but also Scott Hartnell, another super pest in the league, if those guys aren't going to be able to hone their skills and not be able to agitate Sidney Crosby to the point where they're taking penalties, I think they'll be successful, or they'll have a chance at success. But if they keep booking their tickets to the penalty box and sending out the power play unit for the Penguins, I think Columbus is in a lot of trouble.
And Sean, you just mentioned Brandon Dubinsky, the second line of Columbus. So you've got Boone Jenner, Brandon Dubinsky, and Cam Atkinson. A very good line, by mm-hmm. the way.
Cam Atkinson, great.
They're going to be matched up against the line of Guentzel, Crosby, and Sheary, but as we talked about, then your second line, Evgeny Malkin, Phil Kessel, and Brian Rust, I mean, that opens up a better matchup for Mike Sullivan, right? So, I mean, you pick your poison, right? You can't shut down this entire team. They mm-hmm. score 3.4 goals a game. So Marc-Andre Fleury's playing tonight, Drew, and Sergei Bobrovsky, I would give him the advantage over both Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. But again, if you're giving up 3 or 4 goals a night, I mean, is there an advantage, right? So I mean
you got to score 4 or 5.
Right, and I mean, we're not going to get into it right now. As you get deeper into the playoffs, I think they're going to miss Chris Letang more, mm-hmm. especially when you consider that they might match up against Washington mm-hmm. in the second round. I mean, it could be Toronto, but let's assume that it's Washington. That's when I think they're going to miss Chris Letang the most.
Two coaches very familiar with one another, John Tortorella and Mike Sullivan. For years, Sullivan was Tortorella's right-hand man, going from I believe, Tampa Bay to New York to Vancouver. And then they finally sort of split apart when Sullivan got his own opportunity with the Penguins. But two guys very familiar with each other. Will be an interesting sort of chess match going on between Sullivan and Tortorella throughout the course of this series. Quickly, guys, or not that quickly, you got a couple seconds to explain how you think this series is going to unfold. Ez, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, if Chris Letang is healthy, I might pick the Pittsburgh Penguins in five. And I mean, the Columbus Blue Jackets, let's be honest, they were not good. They lost their fourth game in a row against the Winnipeg Jets. They won their last game of the season, but they were struggling down the stretch there. I think they only won three of their last 10 games. I think that 16-game winning streak in December really flattered the Columbus Blue Jackets. I don't think they're as good as they really are. I think they're a decent team, but this Pittsburgh Penguins team, even without Chris Letang in the lineup, I still think is the most dangerous team in the league with the way Crosby and Kessel and Malkin, AL, have been playing. So I'm taking Pittsburgh in six.
Pittsburgh in six. Sean Assor.
I feel the same way. I feel that the offense of the Penguins is going to be a lot to handle for a Blue Jackets team that, yeah, played some pretty good hockey this year but did struggle entering the postseason. And John Tortorella refused to kind of acknowledge their struggles entering the postseason, so maybe a little denial on their behalf. Not 100% sure.
Not just a river in Egypt.
Exactly. But, hey, well, Passover.
Yeah, happy Passover to you guys, by the way.
But I agree with the man to my right here in the bright orange shirt, Pittsburgh in six.
I hate to be the contrarian. I really don't, but I tend to disagree with you guys a lot in these predictions. Something about this Blue Jackets team, I think this is finally the year they win a playoff series. I think that Sergei Bobrovsky, I think the Penguins' injuries on the back end, I think Dubinsky is going to be able to certainly not neutralize Sidney Crosby, but maybe contain him to whatever degree Sidney Crosby can be contained. I think this is a Blue Jackets upset in seven.
I'll say this much, Drew. I wouldn't be shocked if Columbus wins this series. I'd be shocked if Toronto beat Washington. I would not be shocked with Columbus. Two things. I think Sergei Bobrovsky has to get at least two shutouts if they're going to win this series. And Cam Atkinson scored 35 goals, but he only scored two in his last 12. So Cam Atkinson could be the key for the Blue Jackets. I don't think they have a chance if he's not scoring.
Quickly, your Stanley Cup final matchup. You said Florida and Dallas at the beginning of the year. You're allowed to change that now.
You know, I don't want to be that cliche guy that picks the two teams that everybody's picking, but I have to go with Chicago and Washington. My dark horse would be Anaheim because I have the conference finals, Chicago, Anaheim, and then on the east side I have Montreal and Washington. But I do think this is going to be Washington's year, and Barry Trotz is an excellent coach. I don't think sometimes he gets enough credit. Back-to-back 110-plus point seasons. So I'm going to go Washington winning the Stanley Cup.
In how many?
I'll say Washington over Chicago in a seven-game nail-biter.
There you go. Sean, real quick.
Washington over Anaheim in seven.
Washington over Anaheim. You have Washington in seven. I have Washington and Chicago as well. Again, chalk is chalk in some instances. I have Washington winning the Stanley Cup also in seven. I think.
Didn't you pick Washington at the beginning of the year?
I believe I did. I think I had Washington and Chicago at the beginning of the year. Ooh. This is going to be fascinating. It's underway. Reminder, game two of the Leafs and the Capitals series. That's available Saturday night here on TSN 1290. We also have games three and four and any more that are necessary in that series. Thank you, gentlemen, for your work on this show. Chris Curry manning the board. Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg. Big thanks to Scott Powers covering the series for theathletic.com in Chicago. Joe Beninati, the Capitals television broadcaster. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck. Thanks for listening. This has been NHL This Week.